Hello, and welcome to I Homeschool My Kids and You Can Too, an Incandescent Kids book project dedicated to shining a light on the families engaged in the hottest trend in education, homeschooling. In our interviews with parents and kids, we'll be answering the three big questions. Should we do it? If so, how? And in the end, how did we do? I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, your host and the author of I Homeschool My Kids and You Can Too. We thank you for joining us for today's episode.
Hello, I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, author of I Homeschool My Kids and You Can Too. It's a podcast show on the Incandescent Radio Network, and I am thrilled to be here with Ann Miller, the president and executive director of Home Educators of Virginia, HEAV.org. Thank you for being on the show, Ann.
Thanks for having me, Hope.
Absolutely. So Ann is the mother of eight children. She decided in 1980, the year before she had her first child, that she was going to be a homeschool mom. So tell us about this process. What made you make that decision?
Well, my parents actually homeschooled my two younger brothers in the 70s and the early 80s. And my husband was a public school teacher for a short time. And so we saw the results with my brothers, and they were doing great and more outside the box learning. And also we wanted our children to have our values. We wanted to be able to instill our faith in our children. So we decided before we even had any children that we wanted to teach them at home.
Wow, amazing. So tell us how that process worked, because in the book, as you and I have discussed, it's answering three questions. Should I do it? Question one, question two is if so, how, and question three is, okay, now that we've done it, how are we successful? And I'm excited to tell those bookends, you know, the case studies of all the people who have gone through this process, made the decision, and then had tremendous success.
Right.
But the middle part, how do you do this? So can you address that? How in the world, because, you know, everything that I've seen, it's so fantastic. There's so many options, but how do you pick a course, you know, to travel down?
It is challenging, but I do want to slip in that I don't know that everyone should homeschool, but I believe that anybody who wants to homeschool can homeschool.
Well, that's a quote.
And there are tremendous resources out there for every type of teacher, home teacher, every type of student, and it can get a little bit overwhelming. Now, when we started to homeschool, there were no materials anywhere. And then just a few homemade resources came up, and in the early days, textbook sellers didn't even want to sell homeschoolers textbooks. Hmm. Now we have the opposite problem. We have so many resources, and it is hard to narrow down. Our organization, Home Educators Association of Virginia, we actually have curriculum counselors who will help you figure out what your child's learning style is, what your learning style is, because we have found, and I've found personally, that if it doesn't work for me, it's not going to work so well for my family. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that a parent find materials that work well for their child, but also work well for them and their teaching style. So, but we have people who will help you figure that out. A lot of people can figure it out on their own. There are online assessments that you can take to help you figure out your child's learning style. But what we tell parents, though, is just pretty much in the beginning, do your research, read. You cannot read and learn too much about homeschooling and what it looks like and how to do it. But in the end, there are so many choices, just pick one.
Right.
Because as soon as you start, you're going to realize things that you didn't know before. And you're going to see that, oh, this works really well, but this part of this curriculum we hate. And the beauty of homeschooling is when you realize that something is not working for you or your child, get rid of it. Mm-hmm. There are enough resources out there that you should never stick with something that is not working for your family. And I'm not just saying be willy-nilly like flighty, but if it's not working, find something else. Find something that excites learning and that joy of learning in your child and that works for them. And I know for our family, our first year, and we began teaching our children from the beginning. I mean, I was teaching babies to read, and successfully and unsuccessfully. But when it came time for our first official year of homeschooling, I bought there were only two sellers by the time we started actual formal schooling. And I bought the whole first grade curriculum for my kindergarten student because she was already reading. Well, because I didn't know I could have put pieces together, but I quickly saw she finished most of the curriculum within a month.
Wow.
The whole thing. You know, she read the books in like 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. She was done. But it was a place to start. And then I was able to branch out, like, well, this kind of math, I found other kinds of math books that worked better for her and were more suitable and more advanced. But I just picked a place and started. And so that's what we encourage people is, you know, narrow it down to a few choices that you think you like and just pick one, because invariably you're going to make quote unquote mistakes. It's good to come into homeschooling with the idea that you're learning right along with your child. And that is part of the beauty of homeschooling. I know so much more than I ever got when I went to school from teaching my children. And so just consider yourself also learning at home and discovering what works and what excites enthusiasm and a love of learning. And I know for us, I'm going on and on.
No, it's great. Keep going. You love it.
We had several goals for our children. First, we wanted them to have our faith. We wanted to raise them and instill in them a love for God. But we also wanted them to love learning. We didn't want that spark to go out. And we also wanted them to be independent learners. So developing a philosophy of education, what you think, what your goals would be for educating your child. We didn't think of it as a philosophy of education back then, but we knew there were things that we wanted. We wanted them to be entrepreneurial. We thought that was a life skill that we wanted them to have. And so as we chose materials and things that we did through homeschooling, we built all those things in because we had a big picture of where we wanted to go. And when we look back on what our goals were and when we look at the results in our children, we actually succeeded really well. And it doesn't mean we didn't have lots of bumps in the road and, you know, terrible moments and challenging years, but the things that we wanted in our children, they're there, and they are entrepreneurial, and they've amazed us, actually, all of them, with their entrepreneurial mindsets. And even in when they go to work for another company, they have that entrepreneurial mindset, and which we wanted them to have, and gave them opportunities. So look at the materials. Come to the convention. We have an annual convention. It is the third largest in the country, and the resources that are there will just blow parents away. And just come, and it's good to look at things online if you can preview, and we list all the exhibitors, and of course go online and ask questions. We have a Facebook group, Homeschooling in Virginia, and I think, I don't know how many, have almost 9,000 people in the group, I think. It's a great place to go and ask and say, I have a child who doesn't like to read and, you know, they want to play outside all day, and how do I homeschool this child? And that's a pretty typical child, especially boys. And go there and ask questions and get input, and then come to the convention and actually put your hands on the material. If your children are old enough, I encourage people to bring them with them, because we want our children to have buy-in on their education. We wanted them to participate in their learning and choosing what they learn. So we brought them, and I would say, you know, we're looking at Latin this year, and I'm looking at this one, and this one. Go to the exhibit hall, look at those, and let me know which one you like best. Or you need to read some literature this year, you know, go pick out 10 books, and then I'll come and buy them later. And so bringing your children to have a say in their education, especially when they're older, and it can be a little intimidating for high school for some people. And we have a lot of parents who start in high school. Their children are having anxiety issues or bullying issues. There's just a lot of problems. And bring them and let them have a say in their own education. And let them own it, because it's their education. And the more ownership you give them of it, the more they'll excel and love what they're doing.
It's amazing.
I've gone all over the map.
No, it's perfect. Because I think, you know, this is really something that a lot of parents are thinking about doing.
Yes.
And then get overwhelmed. I mean, I wouldn't have even considered taking on this challenge. I would have never had the courage to do it. And I know several families now that, you know, this is really important to them.
Yes.
And figuring it out. So I've been to a handful of events where, you know, I've seen an array of people. Sometimes the women look like, oh, I've got five kids, how am I going to do this, you know, but I'm going to do it. And, you know, to people that are like, I got this, no problem.
Right. Right.
And sometimes they buy the classes, sometimes they teach themselves.
Yes.
So there's lots of ways to go about doing this. And that's what I Homeschool My Kids and You Can Too. The book will address all of that and interview amazing people like yourself. So tell us a little bit, let's just skip to the end and then we'll go backward. Tell us about the success story. So where are your eight children now? What became of them?
Well, seven are married and one is in a relationship that could end in marriage, we're hoping. They're talking about it, so that's good. We have, in teaching our children at home, we were very eclectic in our approach to home education. We did have a vision for classical education. I read Dorothy Sayers' essay, The Lost Tools of Learning, in the 80s, like late 80s when it was first published. And I kept calling up the people who were writing about classical education. And I'm on another bunny trail, but I'll get back to your question. You know, where are the materials? How do we teach our children classically? And classical education, they call the trivium, where the learning stages in childhood go from what they call the grammar stage. And the grammar stage is where children love to memorize things. So when they're young, that's the time to pour in all kinds of memorization work. Now, they don't know exactly where those things fit in, but it's memorizing is easy for them. And then there's what they call the pert stage. Dorothy Sayers called it the pert stage. And that's where they want to argue and debate. Mm-hmm. And they're going to do it anyway. This is like 11, 12, 13. And then there's the rhetoric stage where they want more self-expression. So during the pert stage, you teach them logic and debate. Teach them how to make a good argument. Okay, you want to argue? Let's do it the right way. Teach them about fallacies. And then the pert stage, self-expression, teach them how to write, how to communicate, how to interact their mind with the world. Anyway, so we had that overall picture, but we were very eclectic. So actually, we didn't even talk about what we did most of the time because it was outside the box and experiential. But it is what contributed, I believe, to the growth of our children and their love for learning. They all love learning. We have six boys, and we have, out of our eight children, five of them are engineers.
Wow.
And everything from mechanical to aeronautical engineer, aerospace engineer. But a lot of their engineering came from non-school projects. But we have one son with a PhD in electrical engineering, and he is he's a co-founder of a multi-billion-dollar startup. Mm-hmm. And we have another who is an engineer at NASA. And they let him be entrepreneurial within NASA to create satellites faster and cheaper. Hmm. And another son is an engineer at Dahlgren working on secret weapons. He tells us he had to kill us if he told us what he's working on. And another engineer who is at Fort Eustis, again, working for a contractor involving helicopters and things like that. We have a daughter who's an MBA, and she teaches online classes. She teaches Saxon math classes online, and she's very entrepreneurial. We have another son who has his own landscape business, which has been wildly successful, and another son who works with my husband in his construction business, and a daughter who's an engineer working on satellite launches at Wallops Island.
Wow, that's amazing.
So.
Yeah, so you
taught
them to learn to love. Taught them to learn to love. Love to learn.
Love to learn.
You were successful at that.
And we wanted them to have good character.
Yeah.
And I'll have to say it was their character that opened doors for them more than their education you know, their academic prowess. Mm. It was their character. And that's an important part of being able to teach your child at home and instill good character in them. Because there are a lot of smart people out there, but you get further with character, I would say. more opportunities. People want you to work for them if they know that you're honest and you're respectful and trustworthy. And we saw that open a lot of doors for our children.
Wow. So do you have a teaching background?
No. Actually, I don't even like to teach. Don't Ann Miller, president of HEAB, does not like to teach, and she homeschools her kids. I am not a teacher. I don't love teaching. And I didn't even see myself as a teacher. I saw myself more as a facilitator of my children's education. And so now there are people who love to teach and they want to sit down and have all their lesson plans and worked out. And that's great. And that's the beauty of homeschooling. I can teach my children in the way that works for us, and you can teach your children in the way that works for you. And it's all good. It's all good because they're learning. And but I saw myself, especially when my children got older, as more of a facilitator. And so if they had interests, we provided resources. Interested in chemistry? Here's some chemistry kits. We stopped buying toys when they were little because we realized that they didn't want toys. They wanted real things, and especially Legos for a long time. So we got them Lego Technics. Now, the Technics are nothing now, but back in the day, my oldest is 37. So back in the day, Technics were like cutting edge Lego tools. But so we provided resources. We had art supplies. You know, if they were interested, they were interested in robotics and building things. My husband is a builder, and he encouraged all of our children, not just the boys, to make things. And so we have our own maker fair, you know, in our garage and backyard of everything from welding to building houses. Wow. And so he did projects with them, hands-on projects. But, I mean, one year they built a mini bike from scratch, even the frame and everything. And that was their science for that year. But they learned about ratios and physics and all kinds of things. We're acclimated through our education system, our current education system, to think of learning happening in a classroom. But if we think about ourselves, did our learning come from a classroom? Now, a lot of our learning came from the books we read, the people that we've met, the life experiences that we've had, the things that we're interested in. We delve into them and we find out more about them. And so we have this false construct of a classroom environment and a teacher at the front with a chalkboard that now it's all digital, but in some places. And it's a false construct for learning because children love to learn. They're born with a love to learn. And it doesn't happen in a classroom. I mean, it can happen in a classroom, and it does. Some learning absolutely takes place in a classroom. But when you have the whole world to learn from, you know, forcing all 12-year-olds or all 15-year-olds or all 8-year-olds into one classroom is a false construct. Mm-hmm. And our education system is based on a Prussian model that was designed, I'm sorry to say, forgive me, but it's true, look it up, a Prussian model that was used to produce docile, compliant soldiers who would be obedient to the Kaiser. And so that's what our education model is. And that's not what we want for our family. There's, he just passed away last year, John Taylor Gatto. And he's written some phenomenal books. The Underground History of American Education, you can download it online for free. And it really does give a background of the American education system. But he's also written Dumbing Us Down. And he was New York City School Teacher of the Year and New York State School Teacher of the Year several times. And he gave up because he saw that the education model was damaging children. Mm. And he did unique things in his classroom to get his students interested in learning so that they would learn. Anyway, that's a whole another bunny trail thing.
No, I think that's very true, and I think that is what a lot of parents are they get disappointed that their kids are, like, they know they're bright, but they're not excelling or succeeding right within that framework. And the research I've done, there's about 3 million families in the country that do homeschool, and that number seems to be on the uptick. Because parents are struggling with their kid, the system just not meeting their kids' needs for a variety of reasons, as you mentioned.
Right, right. It's and some kids do great in a classroom environment. That is their learning style. And other kids, they need to be hands-on. Mm-hmm. They need their auditory learners or their kinesthetic learners. They need to be moving and they need to have their hands on it. So the classroom model is good for a certain type of student. They can learn well in that environment, but then you have all the rest of the students who it's not their optimum place of learning.
Yeah, the Howard Gardner's multiple intelligences.
Yes.
Unveiled that, and I think you know a lot of parents get frustrated too because their kids don't fit into that. You know,
right.
Reading, writing, arithmetic. Kind of, this is how I excel, but they do need that. Touch, high touch, or to move around.
Right.
You know, some kids learn by moving their bodies, or
right.
Like your children experiencing all that great building, and that was the science lesson. You know,
yeah.
How fantastic is that? I know another mom that travels around the world with her kids as part of their homeschool
right.
teaching, which is fantastic. You know, if you can do something amazing like that.
Yeah, so do they sit with a textbook in a classroom at home at a desk, or do you take them out to the world and go to museums and visit and learn the culture and meet people? And it's not either or, you can do both.
Right.
But I know at HEAV, we want to encourage parents to get creative, work outside the box. It's very hard to break out of the classroom mindset, because it's what we grew up in,
mm-hmm.
but there are riches out there for our children and for our whole families. You know, I had an age range of children. They're about 15, 16 years between the oldest and the youngest. And we did some learning all together. And especially when they're younger, as they get older, it's easier for them to branch out here and there. But when they were younger, we did a lot of things together. We were studying the Wright brothers, and we studied flight, and they built airplanes and models, and we went to Kitty Hawk. But they were able to do it all together, all ages. And the older ones could read different books that were at their level. My husband was very involved and did the building part. But he read to them all the time. And reading to our children is so important. Back to my children and their successes in life really came from them having the freedom to learn in their own way at their own time. And at their own time is also incredibly important, especially in the younger years. Everyone knows that boys and girls mature at different rates. Girls generally mature faster than boys. But why are boys and girls in the same classroom expected to do the same thing during those formative years when boys are developmentally delayed
mm-hmm.
compared to girls? So I have six boys. I know all about developmental delays. and we, because we had them at home, we were able to give them space, not put them on drugs. You know, they were outside a lot. We had a giant sandbox, and they had bicycles and roller skates and balls, and that's what they needed. And even in for some of them, and I have some that would have been labeled for sure. I do have a dyslexic son, and I have one that would have been ADD, and the other one probably ADHD. And I would send them running around the house,
mm-hmm.
and they loved it. In the middle of the day, they just run around, tap the back door, run. And sometimes that's what they need. They need to move in order to be able to focus. And then they could come back in and focus.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do that when you have a class of 20 or 30 kids.
Right.
But at home, they have that freedom. And the learning at home, because it's individualized, it doesn't take as long as it does at school. Because you have a teacher, and I love teachers. I have the greatest respect for teachers. I don't know how they do what they do. But when you're trying to teach a class of 20 or 30 kids, and when I went to school, we had 40 and 50 kids in our classes.
Where is this?
In Queens.
Uh-huh.
But when you're trying to teach 20 or 30 children, it's hard to help the ones who need more time, and it's hard to challenge the ones who get it like that, and they're just sitting there bored. And so I have great respect for teachers. When you're home, though, you don't have 20 or 30 students. You can individualize the education for your child. And when you do that, The time it takes to do school is much, much shorter. In the elementary grades, you can do all your formal schoolwork in 2 hours a day. You know, three if you have a real overachieving child. It doesn't mean that the rest of their day is what I like to what we did, and what I encourage parents to do is build an educational environment. Everything in our house was educational. Now, did I tell that to my kids? No, I did not. But even art supplies and or videos on how to draw and paint, or music videos, or recorded books. It's all educational. Legos are educational. Legos are profoundly educational, and especially when you get away from the kits and let them be creative and build things from their own imagination. But there's still a lot to learn from looking at a diagram and figuring out how to put something together. But create an educational environment so that when your formal schoolwork is done, that everything they do is, whether it's learning to make potholders and selling them to the neighbors, or making balsa wood models, it's all learning. And they're also developing their motor skills. Children need that. And with the advent of technology, our children are not developing their motor skills like they used to, and they're fine in their large motor skills, because they're not moving as much, they're not outside, they're afraid to send their kids outside. And those are all things that our children need for development. And with homeschooling, you can build that into your day and go outside, go to the park, go to the museums, you know, make a safe place in your backyard where they can, you know, have a swing set and we never had a swing set, but we always had like a rope swing that would twirl around a tree, or something that would help them get their energy out, stay physically fit, and help them develop. Mm-hmm. And so all that individualized education is what creates success in homeschool families, is being able to tailor the education to your child. Mm-hmm. And to go to the library and bring home 40 books. Libraries love homeschoolers. Some libraries even waive the fines.
Excellent. Yes, because I always return them late. So let's go to two points you made.
Did I answer your question?
You sure did, in spades. Thank you so much. Let's talk a little bit about, in the beginning of the interview, you said not everyone should homeschool. So let's talk about when it's not the best idea.
What I believe is that anyone who wants to homeschool can homeschool. Mm-hmm. And we have seen single moms homeschool. We've seen every kind of parent homeschool. You don't need to be a college graduate to homeschool. Lots of parents homeschool their children with GEDs or no high school diploma. That is an option. But that individualized instruction, allowing your child to learn and grow at their own rate, and providing them resources, produces excellent results. And even in public school, the number one predictor of success is parental involvement. Mm-hmm. So if you have a parent who wants to homeschool and they're going to be involved, and they have to make sacrifices, they have to figure out how they're going to make it work with their schedule, if they're working and have to support their family, or they have other challenges, health challenges in their family, if they want to do it, they can make it work. Mm-hmm. We had different challenges in our homeschooling years. And if you have that desire to teach and train your children at home, you can do it. I mean, I had times when I was sick. We had one time where we were remodeling a house for a year and a half. And we like to say our children got a home education. And they did. We did what we called homeschool light. And they focused on language arts and math. And then they worked on the house, and they learned so much during that time. And then when we went back to schooling, they caught up a couple of grade levels. They just moved right ahead. A lot of learning, off your question, which is people who can't homeschool. But I do want to say this: parents worry about, are they going to do enough? Are they going to do enough? You can condense your K through 12 learning into about 3 years. Hmm. Everything that you've learned from kindergarten to 12th grade could really be done in 3 years. So You have 12 years, spread it out and don't worry. I mean, there are some situations where it would be too difficult for the family to homeschool. And, you know, what those situations are, it just depends on the family. It depends on how motivated they are to want to teach and train their children at home.
Right.
But if they want to, they can. And there are resources and people to help them. And a lot of people bring in family members and friends. And there are so many co-ops. There are online classes. There are so many options to be able to make someone's homeschool dream come true.
It seems like there's so many options.
Yes.
And so many paths and so
yes.
much support and encouragement. So I definitely have observed that. In these interviews, different things are coming up. And the second question I wanted to ask you was more about the challenges, which you touched on, but I'm going to go down a rabbit path there. I talked to a gentleman who was one of 11. He was the seventh out of 11. And he actually just was an amazingly accomplished 25-year-old. He's in the financial industry, and he's just done, but he's pretty much taught himself, he says. And he felt like being homeschooled was abusive for him. And because when he was a little kid, 7 or so, or 11 actually, he said that he didn't want to do it to his mom. He didn't want to do this, learning this way.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom said, well, it's either this or go get a job. And he did. He was in Utah, and somehow someone employed him at 11, and he started working, which became part of his education. So I think when you start unpacking what is education, right, which is kind of what you guys are doing, you're really assessing what does it mean to learn?
Right.
What does it mean to be successful in life? And, you know, this thing that most Americans do, go to school, public or private, is one path. But you're saying there's plenty of other opportunities, and that's what this book is uncovering, different scenarios, right?
Right.
But I do want to touch on the challenges. Because I'm actually, my next interview is with this gentleman's mom, the woman who had 11 kids, and, you know, just fascinating. She's just full of great stories, I can tell from just our pre-interview. What were some of the other challenges? Like, some parents have a hard time teaching their own kids. I know I could have never done that with, especially my daughter. You know, my son was a different personality, but we're trying to do our health and wellness company together. So we're at 23, we're kind of getting over that. But I think that would be a challenge, personality conflicts,
yes.
Power struggles,
yes.
Boredom, socialization. I think if you have 8 kids, it's different than if you have 1 or 2. And sometimes in my observation, one kid does really well with it. The other really wants to go out and be socialized. And
right.
that's their way of learning.
Right.
So talk all about some, you know, kind of that's the stuff that people don't necessarily want to address, but I'd love for you to.
As far as personality conflicts, I would always tell my children, if you can learn to get along with everyone in your family, you are going to do great in the world.
Yeah, so true.
And we're coming from a faith-based perspective, so we believe that we are all put into our family for a reason. And so for us, that was how we encouraged our children, that you're here for a reason, and you're together for a reason. And that reason probably is to knock off a few of your rough edges and a few of her rough edges. And so it was one of our goals was for everybody to learn to get along. And was it always easy? No. Were there conflicts? Absolutely. But just like parenting, don't you have to navigate those conflicts as a parent anyway? But when you have one of the things we did want, we wanted to have good relationships with our children. We didn't want to lose our children. We wanted to have a close relationship with our children. And so that was one of our goals. And we intentionally worked on having good relationships. Now, were they always good? No, but we were always moving forward, always apologizing, always humbling ourselves, and realizing, oh, we blew it again. Hey, kids, let's gather around. You know, mom and dad, here we are once again. And I think in modeling that, and our children have told us, as you know, now they have their own children. I'm expecting grandbaby number 16.
Oh my gosh!
And 15 and 16 this year. So they're parenting, and it's like, aha, now we know what you were up to. But we were intentional about it. We read books. We went to workshops. We did personality assessments. We helped our children find out how they were made. What were their strengths? What were their interests as well? But we tried to help them discover who they were and how they were made and what their purpose is. So were there conflicts? Yes, but we tried to work through them. And we also had support teams. You know, we had grandparents, we had aunts and uncles, we had friends who could speak into our children's lives at different times. And I mean, it's being a parent is really what, it's not homeschooling, it's being a parent. And we also had, we had outside activities. We did co-op classes. I'm trying to think if anybody did online classes. I think we did try that with some of the younger ones. We took college classes, you know, working through trying to give our children perspective on their emotions, on what they're going through, and getting to the root of bitterness. We don't want to offend our children, and having that mindset that they're deserving of respect and understanding, and trying to get to their hearts. We wanted their hearts. That was so important. And we really did try to learn how to do that. And we try to help them to learn how to do that, how to have good relationships, and how to forgive and overcome mm-hmm. issues like that. So was it easy? No. Not always. A lot of times it was not hard. And but those, the relationship problems are things that, homeschooling aside, we want to have good relationships with our children. And I just encourage parents to persevere and find out, get to the root of bitterness, because often when there's a conflict, there's something where our child has been offended, and we may not even have any clue what it could be. And I have found with my own children that finding out what that root is, and especially if you can find out before it springs up and envelops them, it's been transformative in relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard. I did lose the heart of one of my sons for about close 2.5 years. And it was the worst season of my life. Mm-hmm. And because I felt like I had no influence. And this is a time when I mean, we'd always been aware of conflicts and conflict resolution in our family and with others. But I didn't know what to do. It's the first time as a parent. And at that point, I mean, I'd already been a parent for probably 25 years. Mm. And more than that, I had never felt this way. I felt powerless, like I had no influence. And getting to that, there was an offense when he was much younger. And it just enveloped him. And as he got older, it just kind of grew and grew and grew. He had his own narrative.
What had happened to you? Not when
I would rather to yeah I would rather that, not go sure. into what
How
it
old was he at the time?
He was 10, but it didn't manifest itself fully until his teen years. Mm-hmm. And I have some permission to talk about some things, but there was an offense, and it was an offense from me. It was my fault. And when I realized, I was devastated. And it was in a time in my life when my mother died unexpectedly. We lost our fellowship. My father died 8 months later. It was a time full of turmoil, and I lost my focus, and I saw the offense. But when I understood the offense, I was able to truly apologize. And if I could go back and redo that season, and actually just these few incidents, I would go back in a heartbeat. And it took us a while to restore our relationship. And he was always respectful, but gone. not there. I mean, he'd be there physically, but not.
Yeah, I guess.
His heart wasn't with me. And it took a while, and I had to change. I had to change in the way that I related to him, because there were things that I was doing that I could see were not to his liking, and I needed to back off, because I had a fear, like, I just want you to be okay, I want you to be godly, you know, but I could be preachy. So I just had to back off on that and let that go. And it was a process for me, and he helped me walk through it, because I could see when I needed to back off. So all that to say is, there can be hope in relationships and restoring relationships when we humble ourselves, really, and try to understand where an offense has come.
Mm, yes, children are our greatest teachers, for sure.
They are. They are.
Yes. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That was beautiful. Is he one of your younger children?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we have a totally restored relationship. Oh, my word. I just can't even imagine. He's like taking care of us. Like, do you have this, Mom? Do you have that, Dad? And
how old is he now?
He's 25.
So which of the engineers is he? Is he one of the engineers?
Yeah, he is one of the engineers. Yeah.
What does he do?
He is. He works on the helicopters.
Are your children close to each other?
Yes, they are. And they are. They love each other. And when they were growing up, they would make plans like for when they'd all get together, how many family's important to us, and we wanted it to be important to them. And we made family a priority. And they get together. I have 6 daughters-in-law, and they love each other, and they love my girls, and they go away for weekends a couple times a year. We have one in Florida. She'll fly up, and they have their own support group, and they get together all the time. And, yes, our children are close.
That's amazing. So where did you bring them up?
They grew up in Williamsburg.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I could just talk to you all day about this because it's so fascinating, and I may come back for more. But you are listening to Ann Miller, the President and Executive Director of HEAV, the Home Educators Association of Virginia. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you'd like to say before we close?
I just am thinking about your question about when it's difficult, when you don't get along, yes. And those kinds of things.
Perfect way to end. Yes.
There are times when I always love my kids, but there were times certainly when I didn't like them. But I just want to encourage anyone who's listening, who feels like they might have that conflict, you might want to look at this as an opportunity to get your child's heart, mm-hmm. to spend time with them, to get to really know them, and figure out like where the offenses are. Because my experience with my children, which is not universal, but I have lots of friends and they have similar experiences. When you can get to that root where there was an offense, where the child something, and it can be what it was for us was not that big of a deal. But to the child, it was everything. And they began to shut down their heart. And there are some wonderful books. Ted Tripp has written Shepherding a Child's Heart, which is really, if you've lost your child's heart, I know that feeling, because you don't care about anything else. All you can think about is that child and how you can restore that relationship. It can happen. It can happen.
Very inspirational and encouraging. And this is definitely an organization with a gob of resources. You can get lost in all the options and the opportunities and the support group that you have around it, so that parents don't feel like they're alone in this process.
Right. And we do workshops at the convention, and we have recordings of workshops. There are all kinds of resources to help you with how to deal with conflict in your family. How do you teach multiple ages together? How do you teach a child who doesn't want to do any schoolwork? What do you do with them? How do you deal with them? How do they get an education? And we have, I mean, every year we do 130, 140, 150 workshops.
Wow.
On every imaginable topic that has to do with homeschooling. And so there are challenges. How do you homeschool children with special needs? I had a dyslexic son. My son, who's an engineer with a PhD in engineering, he didn't read anything until he was almost 10.
Wow.
Nothing. He could not blend. He could not read Cat in the Hat when he was 9.
Wow.
I know. So, but there are resources and people who have gone, who've walked this road before, who are love to help encourage and parents to teach their children and to overcome the obstacles, the seemingly enormous obstacles. And I'm not a particularly patient person, but patience is a good virtue to have. And, you can learn patience. I'm a testimony to that. So if you're thinking about homeschooling, but you're afraid you can't do it, I would just encourage you to give it a try. Do your research, join the groups, ask questions, and you'll hear stories of people who've overcome challenges they never imagined they could. And the fruit in our children is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Somebody called it the great kid average parent syndrome, where people look at the kids and they think those are great kids. And then they look at the parents and they think, oh, those are pretty average parents. If they can do it, I could probably do it. And you don't need to be a super teacher. You don't even need to like teaching. Like, I don't like teaching. But if you have a heart to do it and want to help your child to be successful, and if you want to help protect your child from anxiety, not that you can protect them from anxiety, but you can help them learn to deal with it, and bullying to help them overcome some of those things, but by removing them from the situation, first of all, you can do it. And we're here all year long with counselors. We have lots of phone counselors who can answer your questions, and they're just a phone call away to help.
Beautiful.
And there's no charge for that.
And the convention is here in Richmond, Virginia.
Yes.
12 to 13,000 families show up.
Yes.
And from what you're saying, public and private school parents would definitely benefit from some of these resources as well.
They would. They would, because every parent is a homeschool parent. If you're doing homework with your kid, you are a homeschool parent.
Right.
And if you're taking them on field trips and extracurricular music lessons and all, I mean, that's all part of learning and education.
Yeah.
But yes, the resources there would just blow parents away. And there are a lot of interesting educational resources that are fun that you just don't find at, well, there's no Toys R Us anymore, but you wouldn't find it on the shelf of a toy store. But they're things that can engage your child's imagination and creativity, and more books than you could ever imagine.
Well, we're going to come back and talk some more for sure. Check out heav.org for this June convention, and it's June
6, 7, and 8.
6, 7, and 8 here in Richmond, Virginia. And we look forward to bringing you more information about that, because we'll definitely be there covering it and hopefully having a booth to sell this book, I Homeschool My Kids and You Can Too. We are again talking with Ann Miller, President and Executive Director of the Home Educators Association of Virginia. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, your host and author of I Homeschool My Kids and You Can Too, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of I Homeschool My Kids and You Can Too. If you or anyone you know is part of the homeschool community and would like to be interviewed for the show, please let us know. Just email me at hope@hopegibbs.com. That's hope@hopegibbs.com. We look forward to sharing more inspiring homeschool stories with you soon. Thanks so much.